ministry wife is a vocation without a job description. And let's be honest, sometimes it seems like ministry might be easier if we did have one. If you are a ministry wife like me and are looking for hope, perspective, and a little bit of practical advice regarding your role, you're in the right place. Hi, I'm Christine Hoover. Welcome to the Ministry Wives Podcast, a production of the North American Mission Board. Join me as we hear from women from various ministry contexts, having authentic conversations about our shared joys and challenges, even the ones we're unsure we can talk about out loud. No topic is off limits. Today, my guest is Lindsay Carlson. Lindsay is a pastor's wife, a mother of five, an author, and a Bible teacher. She and her husband have served in full-time ministry for 19 years and just recently moved back to Texas after 7 years of church planting in Baltimore, Maryland. Lindsay joins me today to talk about raising PKs. Lindsay gives us lots of tips and insights about how we can manage Sunday mornings with small kids. Here, friends, is my conversation with Lindsay Carlson. I am so excited to have you, Lindsay Carlson, on the podcast. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
I'm excited to get to pick your brain about raising those PKs in the church. But I think the first thing is just tell us about you and your family and where you are, your ministry context.
So my husband is the senior pastor at Cross Point Fellowship, and we are in Greenville, Texas. And we just actually moved back to Texas in May of 2022. So we were coming out of a context of being in a church plant. My husband and I church planted for 7 years in the East Coast in Baltimore, Maryland. So now we're kind of readapting to a different, bigger church environment. And we have five kids. Our oldest is 18, and she is our only girl. And then we have four boys behind her that are 16, 14, 12, and 6.
Okay. I didn't know you had a lot of boys. I have all boys. I never got the girl, but I didn't know you had all those boys.
It is a lot of boys and a lot of noise.
Yes. A lot of smells.
A
lot of fun. They're super fun.
I feel like I am so much more relaxed as a mom because of how much fun they have. It's kind of made me be more relaxed and more fun. I was a way more uptight mom when I only had a girl. I'm not really sure how that worked, but
Firstborn, you're uptight, or you think it was girl?
I think probably a combination. She was also just a personality that was very obedient and accommodating. And so, you know, I could put the big giant Texas bow in her hair and she wouldn't like it, but she'd be fine about it, you know. And so she was very easygoing. She kind of tricked me into, you know, thinking I was a really great parent. The boys came along and, you know, helped me to understand I was actually struggling.
Oh. The boys are different. Okay, yeah. So we're going to be talking about PKs. We're going to be talking about like preteen and younger. Because we have a wonderful Christy Onyebule coming on next week to talk about teenagers. But I want to ask you, do you have any funny pastor kids stories? Anything that you could tell on your kids publicly that has happened to you guys?
Oh, I think my favorite is just always watching the way that the little ones have absolutely no idea kind of what's going to be the greatest, most embarrassing thing to you as a mom, but they have a way of like finding it and doing it before you can cover that base. So for instance, I think it was maybe one of the first weeks when we had launched our church plant. Our youngest at the time, I guess, well, the baby was in a car seat. So the youngest above that was probably 4 or 5. And he had just had a long morning of church planting. He was not having it. We did not have nursery at that time. And I just remember taking a picture because he had crawled under the seats. You know, we're sitting in a cafeteria of a elementary school. And he is laying on the cafeteria floor underneath the little blue plastic chairs, just sound asleep. He does not care about the sermon. He is not paying attention. He's not even trying. But I'm also sitting there with my other four kids who are awake. And, you know, one of them being this tiny baby that I'm trying to keep quiet. And I just thought, you know, how hilarious that he's just on the floor and I can't do anything about it. He's just going to sleep through the sermon. And this is what we're going to remember as our church plant launched. And then, you know, now fast forward at this new church, we have the baby who is now 5 or 6. And he spends pretty much every week just turning around from the front row and making eyes with people. And so every week I'll kind of get a report from, you know, the young college age, young working kids that'll come up and say, like, do you know what Rex did today? And I will say, there is no telling. But at least he hasn't fallen asleep on the floor in the middle of Dad's sermon.
Yeah. Every pastor's wife listening can relate to what you just said. Yeah. I think one of the things for me that it's more telling on me than my kids, but we also were, you know, church planting and in a school, and half the time when it was time to go, I had no idea where my kids were.
Exactly.
They're somewhere in the school or on the playground or who knows. But I mean, we'd literally get in the car and drive around looking. Oh, look, there's one on the playground. Oh, wait, somebody's still inside somewhere, probably in the library reading a book. Who knows? But we could
never find them. Or they've climbed to the very top of the very tall fence and are perched on the very top of the fence. We've had that before as well.
Yeah, it's hard to keep up with all of the things, especially on Sunday mornings. And that's what we want to talk about, is really kind of what are Sunday mornings? What do we do on Sunday mornings with young kids? So I think when my kids were little, Sunday mornings were absolutely the most stressful, hardest part of the week for me. Because as we all know, as people who are listening, we're parenting solo that day. We're wearing a pastor's wife hat. While serving, you know, especially in church planting, I mean, I was setting up, tearing down. I have a kid in a stroller and I'm trying to support and help my husband. And then somebody's wanting to talk and all of that's happening at the same time. And so it can be so overwhelming. And I'm sure you can relate to that having church planted, but what would you encourage moms listening who are moms of little ones? What should be at the forefront of their minds and their hearts on Sunday mornings in the midst of all of that chaos?
I would think just that God is working all things together. I think that we kind of come into it thinking that Sunday morning should be a restful, relaxing time, because we're going to be with God's people and we're going to sing the songs of the faith and be encouraged in the gospel. And I think a huge part of it as a pastor's wife is just like reconciling the fact that this is going to be the craziest day of the week. And then just going from there, like, how can I minimize the chaos and show up as a servant to my husband, to my church body, but also to my kids that are along for the ride. So they are part of this chaos without really a choice in the matter. Mm-hmm. I chose this because I married my husband and I was alongside him when he decided that he wanted to go into the pastorate. And so while there are things that I can't control, I can show up prepared knowing that it's going to be a crazy morning, but I can also show up with tools that help me to manage the chaos a little bit, to give my kids just expectations to know what's coming. And then just talking to them, I think, about what are the different goals for the morning? And so they're not so surprised when we all kind of get in the car feeling stressed out and overwhelmed, because they know this is just a stressful day and we're going to do the best we can and we're going to extend grace where we mess up.
Okay. So you said minimizing the chaos or managing the chaos and being prepared. What are ways that you have done that?
Okay. So technically, like practically speaking, I think we have always as a family, and I think this is a very different dynamic for different families. So for our family, it has always worked really well to all go together. So I know that there were seasons when my kids were very, very little that we kind of played with my husband leaving and me getting everybody ready at home and then us all meeting him at church. And for us, it just didn't ever work out. It always kind of added chaos. My husband was a worship pastor when we were first married. And so we would have worship team practice in the very beginning at like 8 a.m. And so we're getting to church with four kids that need to be dressed and fed and start practice at 8 a.m. And so we would always make a habit of making sure that we knew what people were wearing the night before. So we had clothes laid out instead of trying to panic at the last minute and say, oh my gosh, so-and-so doesn't have shorts and so-and-so only has one shoe. We kind of had them lay everything out the night before. This is all ideally speaking. Obviously, there were weeks that we were off, but knowing what they're going to put on in the morning, we also have always made breakfast really easy. So instead of thinking this is a morning where we're going to kind of get up and, you know, somebody eats cereal and somebody eats oatmeal and somebody makes eggs, we have kind of grab and go breakfasts that are always available every time I go grocery shopping. The kids know it's going to be this quick thing. And so they're not trying to scrounge and, you know, taking too long dawdling. It's usually something we can literally just grab and eat in the car if we're running behind. There's also expectations set up front about what are we going to be doing when we get there. So instead of just showing up and then pivoting and going, oh gosh, what should you be doing right now? I don't know. Why don't you go do this? They already know. So they're going to expect when we were in the early stages of when my husband was a worship pastor, they knew that there was a nursery there, but they knew that the nursery director didn't come till a certain time. And so mom would come with them into the nursery. We would play for 30 minutes. But then when the nursery director came, they knew that was when mom was going to leave and go down and help dad. When we were church planting, the same kind of thing. They knew that when we showed up, the first thing we had to do was unload the trailer. So when the trailer came to be unloaded, they each had specific jobs. They are going to help do this, or they are going to help play with a baby while the baby is sitting in the stroller in this very specific place. Just helping them to know the routine and the expectations up front has been really helpful. And then also, I think we also have a go bag kind of always. So even at this stage, I mean, my 18-year-old isn't using that, but pretty much all the three younger boys, I still think are using a bag that I carry with us in the car all the time, and it's prepared for them every week. And it's like, it's mostly stationary stuff. It doesn't like, I don't refresh it every week, but that bag is going to be carried into church and accessible to them when they need something to do. So all of those are just like little things that I've kind of gathered over time, but they're tried and true, and I'm still doing them, you know, 18 years into parenting. Uh-huh.
That's really good. I like that you brought up expectations, communicating expectations. I learned that along the way that my kids would get into trouble or I would get more frazzled because I assumed that they knew what I expected of them. Or I assumed that they would just kind of go with the flow. If there was something after church, well, they're just going to go with us. But it would be hard for them to transition if I hadn't told them that it was coming. And so I think that's really important that we're communicating what's expected and also what's going to be happening that day. It gives us points of also teaching if we can say, okay, today there's going to be a baptism after church, because we would do ours outside. So everyone would go outside and we're going to be there later. And this is what baptism is. It gives you opportunities to have conversations. But I'd love to hear you describe some of how you've communicated expectations. First of all, what your kids can expect from you and your husband on Sunday mornings.
Yeah, so I think that has changed over the years depending on our context and depending on their age. But I think that overall, I want them to know that they are not showing up at church to be looked at. That is not why we're taking them to church with us. They are coming to church as worshipers who are coming to church to learn about Jesus, to benefit and to serve the body of Christ. And they are participants in the church just as much as everyone else is. And so even though their parents have different unique roles that they're going to be fulfilling, the kids are not coming to be an extension of me and to be impressive so that I look better. The kids are coming because they are participants in the family of Christ. And so my expectations that I set for them, I want to be very careful to be expectations that I would put on any other kid that's attending. So expectations like we want to show love to one another. We want to be patient. We want to be long-suffering. We want to set things that are not specific to them just because they're a pastor's kid, but things that I would recommend for any child, right? But the part that is different with being a pastor's kid is to be able to just acknowledge that and to say, look, I know that sometimes I get taken up by somebody's talking to me and you have to wait, and that's hard to wait. But you know how Sunday morning, everybody kind of wants to touch base with everybody. And this during Sunday morning is not necessarily the time for us to touch base while we're with everybody else. So I want to hear all your thoughts, and I want to hear what you learned at Sunday school, and I want to hear about the painting that you just did. But let's remember that our special time is going to be in the car on the way home or at nap time before you go to sleep, or whatever that might look like, because it's important for them to understand it's not that I am more interested in the people that are standing right in front of me talking to me. It's that I see these people far less than I see you. And so when we are at church, that's a time that you are called to go and be friends with people that are in your season of life, or to learn and connect with other people that you don't get to experience outside of our home. So I also try to kind of facilitate relationships for them to help them see the beauty of being known and knowing others within the body so that it doesn't feel like their parents are not listening to them and that we're robbing them of attention. Instead, it feels like, no, we've brought you to this place where you can be known by lots of other believers, and you need to be participating in this just like we do. So it's not like, hold on, just wait right there, I'm not listening to you. It's, hey, go and do what we're doing. Be in the body of Christ and be a participant, be a helper, see where there are needs to be met. It's, I think, just trying to model and to point out and articulate the things that are important to me and to my husband in a ministry capacity. So they're not just learning to be pastor's kids. They're learning to be followers of Jesus and servants of the church.
That's really good. How do you help your kids, your smaller kids, understand what dad does?
That is a great question. So I think that probably a lot of those conversations are not necessarily happening on Sunday morning. Right. So, I mean, you know, little bits here and there probably are, but I think a lot of the time, you know, especially during pandemic, but even church planting, my husband officed out of our home for, you know, 7 years. And so it was very hard for little kids to understand that dad actually goes to work and has a job because they see him sitting in his office downstairs and they think, you know, well, why can't dad fix this or put batteries in this? Well, because dad is working. He's not working. He's on his computer. Well, what do people do on their computers? Let's talk about that. So, I mean, frequently we have had to just talk to kids about one of the reasons or one of the ways that daddy is working is by studying the Bible and studying scripture. Another way he is being a pastor is by going and meeting with people. So when daddy leaves, we're not just talking about, oh, it's sad that dad isn't here. Isn't it so sad that that's so hard for you? We're talking about, isn't it amazing that dad has been tasked with caring for the body and that he is able to go and meet with people and pray with them and give them the comfort of the word? So I think it's kind of as we go, we're just constantly talking about the privilege that it is to serve the body of Christ and letting them know pastoring is not actually a 1 hour job a week. My husband and I always laugh about that. Like when people will say, what do you do the rest of the week? Well, we do a lot and we just narrate it for our kids so that they know what it is that dad's doing that matters so much.
Moving back to Sunday mornings, one of the difficulties we have when we have small kids is they're running around, you know, in our church plant, we met in a school gym. And so all the chairs get put away. It's a school gym. Everybody's running around. So I'm trying to engage in conversation while keeping an eye on my kids. And I think that can be really difficult to be present with people when we also have to have one eye on the kids. So any tips for young moms in that area?
Yeah, I think that we have to be careful and give ourselves grace in this, because I think that, you know, for so long in the beginning of ministry, I used to always hear like, well, your kids aren't supposed to be, you know, a model for everybody else's kids, like give them a break, let them be kids. And that is true. But I think that what that has kind of done to pastors' wives in my age group has made us feel like it's wrong for us to have expectations of our children and what's appropriate and what's not appropriate. And I know that when I went to church, and I wasn't in a pastor's family, but when I went to church when I was growing up, there was an expectation that we would dress a certain way. There was an expectation that we would sit quietly during the church service. And today, it is it's just by nature a lot looser, more casual church experience usually during a Sunday morning at most churches. And so that sometimes can confuse kids because they think, well, especially if you're in a church plant and you do play in the cafeteria during the week and on the playground during the week, there's not those visual reminders of like, oh, this is a place where we're going to put on our serious hat and sit quietly and not move our hands all the time. So it is kind of our responsibility as their mom to not just wear the pastor's wife hat, but to also wear the mom hat and to say, I am the one who is setting expectations for my family, and I don't need to fear what other people are thinking because I give my children different rules than my friend might give to her children. So I might not necessarily see someone else's kids doing something crazy and say, you need to tell your child to do this. But I might say it to my child because I want them to know that it is not okay with me. And I usually will say out loud why it isn't okay, because I want other moms who are standing around listening to just understand why I have that boundary. And it's not necessarily that I expect them to follow in line, but it is so that they can see, oh, different people have different understandings of why they do things. And so, for instance, there's a giant stack of chairs in our current church situation, and they're in the corner, and kids love to hide under chairs and like run and climb over all of these chairs. And I don't know why, but I have this very strong sense of like, a kid is going to fall and get crushed by these chairs. I just have this constant fear of like kids actually getting harmed. I'm not going to police everybody else's kids. There's no way for me to be, or I just don't feel like that's my duty. But I am going to see my kid running over to the stack of chairs and say, hey, buddy, we have discussed this. You are not allowed to climb on those chairs or crawl underneath them. You may play here or you may play here. And that lays a very specific line, but it also helps them to know what the boundaries are. And I think that sometimes like we've had to say things like when we were in the church planting context, we had a playground outside. It was very easy for the kids to head out of the cafeteria doors and go run on and play on the playground. But frequently what that would turn into is one kid leaves the playground outside and goes around the front of the school. And then when a parent goes out to find them, suddenly there's all these kids on the playground, but their kid is missing. So we had to have very specific rules about you may go to the playground, but you may not leave the playground. Mm-hmm. If you leave the playground, you only leave the playground with your mom, not with a friend, right, not with someone else's parent, you know? So, I mean, some of these conversations I think are happening and unfolding in real time because we're realizing like, oh, they don't know that. I need to just make that very clear. But I think that we kind of didn't ever have really strict boundaries on our kids. Like after church, we're not expecting them to sit in the front row of the church with their hands folded in their lap while we're finishing up our conversations. I think they've exercised all their self-control listening to the sermon. By that time, they need to have some time to run free. But we've also tried to encourage them to do it in a safe way where we know that they are safe and other kids are safe as well, mm-hmm, when we can't have our eyes totally directed on them at all, mm-hmm, times.
It goes back to the expectations that we were talking about, setting them and conveying them to the kids. And I mean, we didn't go to church altogether, so I'd be with my kids in the car. And every week I was kind of saying similar things, you know, today this is what's going to happen. And if you need to talk to me when someone's talking, if you need something from me when someone's talking to me, here's what you should do. Here's what's expected of you today. And also, here's some people you might see. Go and talk to them. Make sure you say hi to so-and-so. They're visiting today from out of town or whatever. So just conveying those things as we go. And then sometimes needing to adjust. If we find that a child is, disappearing, we need to make sure we adjust and we communicate that what we're expecting of them. So
we've also had times where we've had like if a specific kid needs reinforcement, like there are people in the church that are really good about saying like, hey, I can tell that you're stressed out every time this kid is doing XYZ. So why don't I step in and be your person after church and I will pick them up and I will hang on to them. And I mean, it's still in the context of they're in the middle of the room with everyone. But it's just knowing that my specific friend that we've had this discussion has volunteered to be the keeper of this child for this small amount of time. And it's such a gift because they actually build a relationship in that, yeah, because they know if they need something, they're going to ask her. But it also helps me to not feel like I'm just following eyes all over and not really actually listening to the person that I'm standing in front of.
Yeah. And I would say to somebody listening, if somebody didn't volunteer for that, you can always ask for that. You can ask someone to help you, you know, maybe like an older teenage girl or a young college student or whatever, whoever it is. They don't always know that you need the help, but you can ask and people are generally very glad to step in and help with that. So Lindsay, I'm wondering about discipline because you mentioned, you know, sometimes there's an unruly child and our child does need discipline in that moment. And I think that's kind of stressful. I would start sweating the moment I realize I have to start disciplining this child here and people are watching.
I think kids get that. Kids know. And so I think they almost test it even more because they're like, well, what is she going to do? So-and-so is watching.
Yeah. So what are some things that we should consider when we need to discipline our children on Sunday mornings?
I think the first and foremost that I have learned the hard way is not allowing that pressure of, oh my goodness, what is everyone thinking? Kind of send me into hyperdrive because I think most of the time, the panic and the anxiety of the like, I have to control this child and this has to stop right now. This behavior can't go on. That fear alone kind of has a way of keeping me from thinking rationally and calmly and walking by the Spirit. And so I think that I frequently, and this is an ongoing thing with a six-year-old in church right now, I have to remember, what am I doing? Am I parenting so that I'm not embarrassed, or am I parenting because I want my child to know God's love and to learn what is good and right? Mm-hmm. And I think that sometimes if I'm not using self-control and trying to walk by the Spirit, I gratify the desires of my flesh and I might grab somebody's arm and, you know, like, you know, pull too hard or talk too angrily in their ear, you know. But I think that noticing that desire of my heart to please others and to be impressive to others, and just confessing that to the Spirit in that moment and saying, Lord, help me to not be embarrassed, but help me to do the right thing by my child, which is to love them and to discipline them with kindness and gentleness. Mm-hmm. And so with my specific child that we're learning that habit right now, I will frequently bend down on his level in church, which I sit in the front row fully knowing that everyone is watching me. I don't think everyone is watching me, but I kind of like being a pastor's wife that just says, hey, this is hard. We have kids in church. This is difficult. Watch me fail. And I just am okay with failing on the front row. So I do it for all to see. So I am very comfortable today. I wasn't years ago, just bending down and getting right into his ear, like I might sit while he's standing and say, how you are behaving right now is not appropriate. I know that you know the right way to behave when we're doing this. And I'm going to challenge you to honor God in the way that you know, fill in the blank. And then he's probably still going to stomp and pitch a fit. The past couple of weeks specifically, I've just let him do it. I've stood up and he's like lying on the pews or the seats behind us. My other kids are all standing there singing, engaging with worship. And while my six-year-old is not, you know, like flailing and kicking things, but I mean, he's very clearly like anybody who looks is going to see him do that. And I'll give him a minute. And then I might lean down again and say, I think that we might need to go out and have another conversation. And usually he doesn't want to get up and parade out in front of the entire church. So, I mean, I know my child well enough to know what kinds of things are going to be used to spur him on to obedience and which things are not. But I mean, I think that you have to know your child and walk in the Spirit in that moment. And I think that the overarching goal is how can I connect with their heart and help them to know that I believe that they can do the right thing and that they have the tools to do them, and then support them in that moment. And I think sometimes, like, I think in the heat of the moment where your husband is up on stage and you know your kid is going to like scream or draw attention or whatever, the best thing that you can do is to just leave with mm-hmm. them. Like, take them out, go to the bathroom, go to the nursery, sit outside with them. And frankly, I mean, there have been Sundays before with little ones where if someone was just really struggling to have a week where they were obeying, we would sit outside of the main room where we could still hear, but there was also a consequence involved. It wasn't like, this is a fun thing that now I get to go have special time with mom in the hall. It was like, if we have to leave church and I have to go stand outside to remind you of how we're, you know, expecting you to behave in church, then maybe we're not going to have television today. And that's really sad and disappointing, but next week you'll have another chance. So, I mean, I think it's okay to extend consequences later and not in the moment when it's just going to inflame the anger and make the situation a lot harder.
Mm-hmm. How do you know, this is a big question that people ask me, young moms ask me, and so I'm going to pass it along to you. How do you know when to go to church events? So we're not talking about Sunday mornings anymore. We're talking about more of the, you know, Some people are going to attend, some aren't. This isn't the, you know, church service every Sunday. And sometimes when we have small kids and we know they've already been, we've taken them here, we've taken them there. How do you know when it's just going to be too much for the kids to handle to go to this thing?
That's a really good question. I think obviously there's no easy answer to that. But I think that part of it is knowing our own personalities and knowing our kids' personalities, because I have I have some kids that would be happy to stay home all the time, and then I have other kids that would be happy to go to every single event. And so when you throw five of them together, we can't please everyone. There's no way. And I don't even particularly always know, like I might put things on my calendar thinking, oh, this is how I usually arrange my time. And then we get to that week and somebody was sick and I'm in a bad mood and I really don't want to go. And I have to make a decision at the last minute. Like, is it okay for me to miss this event? Because, you know, I can tell that so-and-so is really off or I'm really off. So I think some of it is knowing, in principle, what you believe and where you want to be committed. Because I think I'm a pastor's wife who genuinely feels a love for the church and wants to be in ministry with alongside my husband. So I am typically having to remind myself, whoa, whoa, too much, draw back. You need to make sure that you are caring for the needs of your kids. My natural tendency is probably going to be to overcommit and overbe there. But I have lots of pastors' friends, pastors' wives' friends, that their tendency is the opposite. Their tendency is very homebody. They want to, you know, gather their kids in a little circle and never leave the comfort of their own home. They're going to struggle with different tendencies and have to press themselves to go out and be with the people. So I think it's a good opportunity for us to teach our kids how to prioritize their desires and their limitations and their time, because these are things that everyone is going to struggle with, whether or not they are going to be in a pastor's family long term. The skills and the grids that we're teaching our kids to think through right now are going to be helpful for them in their families, whatever their family looks like when they're adults, because we're teaching them to think through and ask questions like, am I wanting to stay away from the body because I'm feeling tired and my body needs rest? Or am I wanting to stay away because I'm feeling just disengaged and I'm unmoved by being with the people of God? I don't want them to always give into the fleshly persuasion to stay home because it's easier, because that's a muscle. We have to learn that it's kind of always feels a little uncomfortable to do the right thing. I mean, I think about working out, like, I am probably never going to be the person that wakes up and goes like, man, I can't wait to work out this morning. But I'm going to be the person that says, I know that if I go and work out, it will feel good to my body and I will feel better today. So I think that setting those kind of realistic, again, expectations for our kids to say, like, we all have limits. And so it's good and right for you to tell us. But also, like, giving them the freedom to voice those limitations. And I mean, that is going to look very different for a 2-year-old than it is going to look for like my 8-year-old or my 12-year-old. But they have to learn those things. And I think, you know, when they're 2 and when they're 6, we kind of, as their mom, have a way of knowing through their behavior, like, oh, when this kid starts throwing lots and lots of tantrums back together, it's usually because they've had too much socialization. Yeah. They've been around too many people. And so maybe tonight, Sunday potluck fellowship is a place that we need to stay. We also have always kind of had I don't want to say a rule, but we've always felt like if we're going to prioritize any gathering, it's always going to be Sunday morning. So if we have a kid that we know is just super socially overwhelmed and can't handle a ton of socialization, we're not going to be like, oh, sure, go to Wednesday night, kids ministry, but I'll stay home with you on Sunday and we can watch TV on Zoom. Like, we're going to make sure that they're in, and then we're adding things as they can and are able to attend. But I think just kind of teaching them how to think through that. Why do we go? And do we go just because we feel like it and it's going to make us feel better? Or do we go because God's word commands us to? I think that is the most helpful way, I think, to teach kids. And then I think sometimes they're like freeing ourselves from the expectation that it's like right or wrong to be at everything all the time. Like, it's not.
That's right. Really, really good stuff. One of the things that this may be more my personality, and I know there are some pastors' wives with this personality. You just said you like to be involved. You want to be engaged with everything that your husband is doing and you really enjoy it. You feel called to ministry yourself. Sometimes I recognized when my kids were young that sometimes I felt, or I would realize I was thinking, that they were a hindrance to ministry. Have you ever felt that way? And what truths have you learned about that?
Whether my kids were a hindrance to ministry?
Like to church ministry, being able to be there, being able to be involved in the ways that you want.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I have felt that way. And I mean, and I think that that's just, there's freedom in admitting that, because I think the Lord uses my kids to put my flesh to death all the time in all kinds of ways. I mean, I would much rather sleep until 10 o'clock in the morning. I have always had early risers that get up at 6 a.m. And that's my wake-up call that the day is not mine. It's the Lord's. And, you know, so I think that I feel like I have learned the lesson over years and years of whenever I feel that instinct to feel like they're a hindrance, to immediately turn to the Lord with that and confess that and to say, Lord, I know that children are a good gift and that these are my primary ministry within my home, and help me, Lord, not to idolize Christian ministry or the church life above that of my family who I'm called to. And so I think that the freedom of like confession, but then also having a longer perspective of the fact that if I actually love ministry, part of that love is teaching my children to love ministry as well. And I think sometimes when our kids are very little, we haven't had the perspective shift yet because we haven't had time to see the fruit that it's producing. So I will tell you that after, you know, leaving a church plant, seven years after leaving church planting, we came into a church that is a bigger church, and people are just getting to know our kids for the first time. And we hear people say all the time, like, you have the greatest kids. Your kids are so servant-hearted and your kids are so good at knowing people. And wow, they just jumped in and connected so well. And I am able to see like, Lord, that's your grace. That's because we have kept them with us this entire time. And we have tried to disciple them as we are discipling others and not in the other order. So my kids understand what it means to show up and look for the person who's not connecting with anyone, or to ask someone, oh, hey, haven't seen you in a long time. How are you doing? They know how to do those things because they've been alongside of us, and they don't see a very two-faced faith. They see mom and dad are the same people at home that they are when they're in public in the church. And so seeing that fruit makes me want to be more faithful to them, not less faithful, because it's so beautiful to see their own faith come alive and for them to come into their own, you know, callings.
And for those who are just getting started in church planting, that is a gift in church planting, because I've seen the same with my kids, and it came through church planting, that they know how to engage older people, younger people. They were along for the ride. They grew up in it, and there's a lot of blessing that comes from it. So
absolutely. Yeah.
Hopefully that's an encouragement to anybody, a church planting with young kids. Well, Lindsay, this has been so fun, and you've given us so many nuggets to think about, and I'm thankful for that. I'm thankful for those young moms listening who can grab onto that stuff and go, okay, I can do this. I can do all these things. The Lord is with me. So thanks for joining me today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for listening to the Ministry Wives podcast, a production of the North American Mission Board. If you found this content helpful, please subscribe, rate, and review us on your podcast platform or share it with a friend. You can find this podcast and other helpful resources at ministrywivespodcast.com.